hard to brush away the snow, which had begun to fall again, quite heavily. It hadn't had time yet to freeze, she thought, and it was only a short drive to the vet's. The road leading to the village was snow-laden, and although she could feel it was slippery under her tyres, the Rover held the road well. She was making good progress, with the village in sight, when an oncoming car skidded. It made straight for her. She wrenched the steering wheel to the left, and the car gave an almighty bang as the front wheels went into the ditch. She barely felt her head bump into the steering wheel before everything went black. Someone was tapping on the car window. What? Lana pulled herself up from where she'd fallen forward, holding her head. She felt confused. Where was she? And then she remembered that car. It had been about to plough into her. To avoid it, she'd had to pull right over. So why did she feel as though she was tipping forward? Oh, God, she must have plunged into the ditch. The car must be stuck, nose down. She looked at her hand. There was blood. Quite a lot of it. Her head spun. She closed her eyes. Maybe if she could sleep, she'd feel better. The tapping was louder. For goodness sake, whoever it was would surely break the window. Gingerly, she turned her head towards where the voice seemed to be coming from. A man with a cap, his mouth moving, but she couldn't hear any words. He seemed to be shouting something and pointing. She tried to open the window to hear what he was saying, but it wouldn't move. She tried the door. Nothing. Drawing in a shaky breath, she tried again, but it had somehow locked itself. She rattled it, but it wouldn't budge. The man outside shook his head and disappeared. No, don't go, she gasped. He couldn't leave her. But he hadn't heard. She put her hand to her head again, recoiling at the sticky blood. Where was her bag? She fumbled for it on the front seat, but it was empty. Maybe it had fallen on the floor. She bent down, relieved when her hands closed over the handles. She raised her throbbing head and opened her bag, pulling out a handkerchief. She held it to her forehead where the bleeding seemed to be coming from. Oh, where was that man? Please let him have gone for help. Tears of self-pity swam before her, making everything out of focus. She felt the car shake and tried to see out of the window. The man in the cap was outside, pulling on the door handle. He looked up and gave her a wave, then a shout of triumph as the door swung open. He stuck his head in. Are you all right, miss? Yes, I think so. Her voice sounded far away. What's that bleeding? Let me look. It was the last thing she wanted, to be examined by a man with dirty hands, but he reached in and took the handkerchief away. Oh, nasty. You might need a stitch or two in that.
No, I'm sure it will be fine if I can get it washed and a plaster over it.
Where were you going?
To the vet's.
Frank Drummond's place?
Lana nodded, making her head throb even more madly.
I'll get you out of the ditch, but I'm not sure you should be driving with that cut.
I'll be okay, honestly. It's only half a mile away.
The man nodded. I'll get one of the shire horses. Shan't be long. You stay right there. He went off, chuckling at his little joke.
Furious now with the unknown driver, who must have driven off without stopping to see if she was hurt, Lana swore out loud, tears of anger spilling down her cheeks. If it wasn't for the kind man who must have seen the accident, she shuddered, dreading to think what might have happened if he hadn't been there. As good as his word, the man soon returned with an enormous horse and a length of rope. She glimpsed him disappearing underneath the rear of the car to tie the rope around the back axle, she guessed. Minutes later, he'd attached it to the horse's harness and was shouting instructions. The car began to heave and groan as the horse pulled. Once she felt a slight hesitation and her heart plummeted, but then the car gave an almighty judder. She felt a thump as it righted itself on the road. Oh, the relief to be on level ground. She looked out of the window. It was getting dark, and she rubbed her numb fingers, trying to bring some life to them, all the while thinking how the dear man and his even dearer horse had rescued her. She opened the door and tried to stand, but her legs gave way, and she sat back on the seat again. The man in the hat popped his head in the car again.
"There you are, miss, saved by Clemmy. She and Winnie are the best shire horses in the county, but Clemmy here seemed the most eager to come and help."
"What wonderful names," Lana said, managing a wan smile. "I can't thank Clemmy enough. And you, of course. Are you one of the farmers?"
"Yes, Sid Smithers at your service, miss. Lonsdale Farm, just over yon."
He jerked his head, then looked up at the darkening sky.
"And I believe you're up at Bingham Hall." She nodded. "It's going to freeze tonight, so be sure you're not out in it. Wouldn't want you to come another cropper. I might not be nearby the next time."
"Did you actually see what happened?"
"Oh, no, miss. I was in the stables. It was the driver who nearly ran into you. Almost had hysterics telling me."
"Did you know him by any chance?"
"Yes, but it wasn't a man. It was the local midwife, Celia Daniels. Have you met her?"
"Oh, not that woman."
"What the hell was she doing driving like a maniac in this weather? Couldn't she..."
The farmer interrupted her.
"She was too upset to do anything, but asked if I would come and get you out of the ditch."
"Oh," Lana said. She gave him a weak smile. "Yes, I have met her."
She retrieved her glasses and put them on.
"Thank you again, Mr. Smithers. I'll be all right now. I'm only a couple of minutes away from the vet's, so I think I'll carry on."
"You drive safely then, love."
"Lana, dear God, you're hurt? Whatever's happened?" Frank's eyes were wide as he practically dragged her inside and took her by the hand through the waiting room to a room marked private. A dog barked somewhere.
"It's Barney," he said. "He heard you and wants to say hello, but I'm going to leave him in the kitchen for now. Come, sit here."
He gently pressed her into the only armchair in the room.
"Let me go and wash my hands and I'll have a look at that wound."
He was back immediately.
"It's not bleeding much now," he said, his capable fingers probing a lump that was beginning to feel the size of a walnut. "Just a nasty bang. Heads always bleed and look worse than they are."
"Yes, but you're comparing me with the heads of dogs and rabbits and horses," Lana said, trying to inject a little humour.
For some reason she felt safe now she was here with Frank. He was a vet, yes, but he would know about wounds caused by accidents, whether on animals or humans.
"The farmer who rescued me said he thought I'd need a couple of stitches."
"No, I don't think so," Frank said. He put a white cloth in her hand. "Hold this over it while I get some water to clean it thoroughly. Then I'll put a dressing on and we'll see how it feels. But first you're going to have a brandy." Frank disappeared and came back with two glasses of amber-coloured liquid. "Drink it," he said. "It will calm your nerves. In fact, I'm having one as well."
"I'm not that keen on..."
"I'm ordering you to drink it. It's medicinal."
"Well, in that case..."
She swallowed a mouthful, then coughed and looked up at him.
"Oh, not used to it."
"Give it another go," Frank said. "And meanwhile, can I leave you a minute while I make the tea?"
Lana nodded. All she wanted to do was lean her head on the back of the shabby armchair with its embroidered cover and close her eyes. She'd almost nodded off when Frank appeared with a tea tray.
"I've put sugar in yours, whether you take it or not."
"I haven't taken sugar since the beginning of the war," Lana protested.
"It's good for shock."
He handed her a cup with a couple of biscuits in the saucer and pulled up a chair opposite.
"Drink your tea, and then tell me exactly what happened while I clean your forehead."
Lana told him how Farmer Smithers, with the help of Clemmy, the shire horse, had pulled her out of the ditch.
"Nice chap, old Smithers," Frank said, dabbing some TCP onto the cut and ignoring Lana's wince. "Thank God he was there. He could have frozen to death if no one had come along."
He frowned.
What happened to the other driver? Did he stop to see if you were all right?
I don't know, she said. I must have fainted. But Mr. Smithers said she alerted him there'd been an accident, and could he help get a car out of the ditch?
Not another woman driver, Frank smirked. Did he really believe he was a good driver? Lana's temper flared.
Excuse me, but I wasn't the one skidding all over the road. Celia was driving much too fast for the conditions.
Frank's jaw fell.
Celia? Celia Daniels?
I'm sure there's only one Celia, Lana returned coolly.
She's a bit of a menace, Frank said, as he fixed the dressing in place, although she does have a good reputation as a midwife.
I just wish to God I'd never taken her out those few times. She puts far more into it than I'd ever meant. Drives me nuts.
She thinks you're in love with her, but don't realise it.
Frank's eyebrows shot up. Did she tell you that?
Yes, in no uncertain terms.
Well, there's no need to be jealous of Celia. Frank's eyes gleamed.
I'm not sure about that, Lana said, swallowing her irritation. She's an attractive woman.
And always right, he said with a roguish grin. Imagine living with that level of perfection on a daily basis.
I couldn't imagine. Her tone was cutting. She should leave now. Politely thank him and go. But before she could move, Frank suddenly became serious.
I'm glad you managed to get here, Lana.
He put his hand lightly on her arm. Where were you going before the accident?
I was coming to see you. I was actually getting quite worried not hearing from you. At first I thought you were busy, but all these weeks have gone by with nothing.
She might as well get things out in the open. She looked directly at him. I wondered if Carl Best had said something to you. He wore an expression she couldn't fathom. What did he know?
I'm sorry I haven't been in touch, he said finally, rubbing his eyes. You're right, I have been busy with one emergency after another, but that's not particularly unusual.
He looked up. What was Herr Best supposed to have said?
You realised he was German then?
You couldn't disguise that accent.
He drank the rest of his brandy in one gulp.
Go on, Lana. Please don't take me for an idiot.
Lana wished she hadn't started this, but it was too late.
I just thought he might have said something about him and me.
He's German, for God's sake. He didn't talk about anything except the weather and how he hoped his train wouldn't be delayed. He's obviously a refugee or a detainee. I'm surprised he hasn't been interned, so I reckon he must be working for the British to be freely roaming the countryside.
He paused and looked at her directly.
So, what were you afraid he might say?
To Lana's fury, she felt her face redden.
You see, he didn't have to say or explain anything.
Frank looked away, but went on without waiting for her reply. There was no need. It was crystal clear when I saw your face as you said goodbye to him.
What do you mean?
I think you know, but if you want me to spell it out, it was perfectly obvious you're in love with him.
She was silent.
I did mean to ring, he continued, but as the time went on, I thought it best to let you be free to go to him.
Did you get my note to thank you for the brooch, which I love? She added lamely, pointing to the lapel on her dress.
Yes.
And you didn't think to reply?
No. You didn't need me to complicate your life any further.
Lana bit her lip. Frank was obviously terribly hurt. She should have gone to see him weeks ago. How could she have left it so long? He must have felt used, the way she'd gone out with him in between times. She'd felt at the time it was fine because they were just good friends, but something had changed between them. And his next words took her completely by surprise.
You see, Lana, he said, taking hold of her hands, it's been very hard for me because I've fallen in love with you. And just when I gathered the courage to tell you, I saw that your heart belonged to someone else.
Dear Frank,
Lana gazed at him. Something stirred within her. He looked so vulnerable. I wouldn't hurt you knowingly for anything in the world. I always felt we were friends. We've always got on so well together, and I've loved spending time with you, going to the pictures, even changing your wheel. She tried to make him smile. But you never regarded our time together as anything serious, Frank said, whereas I hoped you might come to love me one day. I even asked you if you loved someone else, do you remember? And you said you weren't sure. So I didn't give up hoping until I saw you with Herr Best at the orphanage, and at that moment you looked very sure.
Lana shook her head, truly not knowing what to think. What if Carl had never come into her life? More and more she was beginning to think she and Carl could never be together. Peter wasn't ready to share his father, and Carl wanted to take her away from her country, her family, her job with the children that she loved, without even a discussion. It wasn't that Carl was being thoughtless or didn't care. It was just how he was. The culture must be so different in Germany. But Frank was everything in a man she'd ever wanted. His openness, his values, his love of nature, reminding her not for the first time of Dickie. And she loved how he looked after the animals in his care, treating them as precious individuals. He was well-read, he had an endearing sense of humour, and they liked a lot of the same things. She always felt safe with him and completely comfortable. Until now. Her heart squeezed with the pain she was inflicting on this dear man. Frank went to the window and peered out. "It's gone very dark all of a sudden," he commented, pulling the curtains. He turned round. "And by the way, Miss Ashwin, you're not going anywhere tonight. It's pitch dark now and the roads are going to freeze again." He always called her Miss Ashwin when he was teasing her. "I'm fine now, I've had a cup of tea and the brandy you forced on me," Lana said, smiling, trying to keep it light. There was no way she could possibly stay here overnight. The villagers' tongues would wag right out of their mouths. Frank shook his head. "I didn't train at veterinary school for 7 years not to know when an animal is fit to be sent home or not. And I'm afraid the same goes for you. I don't have anything with me. No toothbrush, no nothing." "I always keep a new toothbrush," Frank grinned. "Never know when one might have an unexpected guest." "Celia?" She shook the unwelcome thought away. "Frank, I must go back. It's only a few minutes' drive, and Maxine will be getting worried. I'm going to telephone her right now." He returned within minutes. "Your nice matron perfectly understands. She says under no circumstance are you to drive home in this weather with a cut on your head. And if you don't feel much better tomorrow, she'll send for the doctor. I told her I would keep an eye on you, and she said she was most grateful. So," Frank smiled, "it's bed for you, young lady. You're going to rest in the guest room for at least a couple of hours." He looked at his watch. "And then I'll come and see how you are. If you feel hungry, and I think you may by then, I'll make you a boiled egg with some bread and real butter. How does that sound?" Lana had begun to shiver, but she simply said, "You're very kind." "I'm not being kind," Frank said abruptly. "Anyone would do the same." Chapter 40. Lana removed her blouse and skirt and stockings and pulled back the covers. The room was clean but unaired and plainly furnished, though there were a couple of landscape paintings on two of the walls. She pulled back the sheet, dreading a cold bed, but to her relief, Frank had put a hot water bottle where her back would lie. He'd drawn the curtains and left a bedside light on, together with a glass of water and two aspirins. What a thoughtful man he was. "Any problems, call out," were the last words she remembered hearing before her head touched the pillow and she was sound asleep. For the first few seconds after Lana awoke, she had no idea where she was. Pushing herself up too quickly, she fell back again. Her head swam. She put her hand to the dressing on her forehead. The accident. She was in Frank's house. It must be well after midnight. She reached for the glass of water and drank deeply. Her stomach felt empty, and she remembered Frank had promised to make her a boiled egg. It was too late now. She'd slept through supper. Too bad, as she felt quite peckish. There was a gentle tap at the door. "How's my patient?" Frank stepped in. "Hungry?"
"Not half, but it's too late for you to be cooking now."
"It's only coming up to 8. Perfect time. I'll bring it up for you."
"No, please let me come down. I'm much better, honestly."
"Well, if you're sure." He closed the door behind him. She dressed quickly and came down the stairs. "I'm in the kitchen," Frank called. "Come on in. Barney's going mad wanting to say hello."
Barney greeted her with a few wet licks on her hand and some happy-sounding barks. He wagged his tail, then went to his basket and curled up again, as though satisfied that he'd made her acquaintance again. Frank had set the table for two and gestured for her to sit down. "How'd you like your egg?"
"Soft, please," she said.
Frank set the egg timer.
"I'll just wash my hands from Barney's welcome."
He moved to the side of the sink. She was conscious how near he was as she put her hands under the tap. But he didn't touch her or make any remark. She could smell the maleness of him, warm and musky. She mustn't think like that. It must be the shock of the accident that had her senses reeling. Frank had made more tea, and they ate and drank in companionable silence.
"Better," Frank said when they'd finished.
"Much."
She smiled at him, feeling almost at home.
"Was it the brandy or my perfectly cooked egg?"
"A combination," she grinned, then became serious. "Frank, I'm going back to Bingham Hall. Don't try to dissuade me. I'm truly better and it's not late, not even 9 o'clock.
"I can see you've made up your mind," Frank said. "But will you promise to telephone as soon as you arrive?"
"I promise." She looked at him. "I can't thank you enough for what you've done for me. Especially after... after...
after I said I loved you, knowing you don't love me," Frank finished for her. "Don't give it another thought. I hope we'll still be friends. I want us to."
"I'd like nothing more," Lana said.
He fetched her coat and bag, and when she was ready to go, she turned to him.
"Don't leave it so long next time."
"I won't."
He kissed her on the cheek.
"I'll come with you to the car."
"There's no need, honestly. You're not dressed for it. Just stay in."
He made to follow her. "Please, Frank, I'm perfectly all right." She picked her way carefully to the car, slipping every few steps, but at least it had stopped snowing. She pressed the starter button, and on the second attempt, the engine spluttered into life. Turning her neck to see Frank, watching her from the door, she waved. He waved back. After 10 minutes of careful driving over the icy road, this time with no mishaps, she was back at Bingham Hall.
"I'm going to have a look at that forehead," Maxine said as soon as Lana appeared the next morning.
"Really, Maxine, I'm fine. I didn't sleep too well, but it was nothing to do with the accident."
"Now, Lana," Maxine's voice was firm. "All right, matron, if you insist,"
Lana grinned, then wished she hadn't. The cut seemed to stretch, giving her a spike of pain, but it had stopped throbbing at least. In the sick ward, Maxine gently removed the dressing and inspected the wound.
"It's weeping a little, so I'll clean it again and put some antiseptic cream on it."
After Maxine had finished, she said, "Now, I want you to watch my finger without moving your head." She held up a forefinger and slowly moved it in front of Lana's eyes, then back again.
"Good," Maxine said. "I'm pretty sure you don't need to go to the hospital, but if you have any problems, headache, feeling sick or dizzy, then come and see me. All being well, I should be able to take the dressing off in the next day or two and let the air get to it."
"Thanks, Maxine." "You need a hot drink," Maxine said, washing her hands. "I'm going to ask Ethel to bring us some tea to my office. I want to hear all about it."
"Can you believe it was the ubiquitous Mrs. Daniels who alerted Farmer Smithers?" Lana said.
"Oh, I can," Maxine said. "But the question is, did you mention this to Frank?"
"Yes, I did, because he asked if the driver had stopped to help me. When I told him it was Celia Daniels, he told me he wished he'd never gone out with her, as she made more of it than he'd intended. And Frank always strikes me as being absolutely honest. But I didn't bother to tell him she more or less threatened me to lay off her man."
Maxine smiled. "I suppose one can't blame her. He
He is a very good catch. One of the few, I think, in Bingham. No wonder she doesn't want to let him slip through her fingers. She gave Lana a piercing glance. I shouldn't pry, but do you feel any different towards him after yesterday? Well, a man doesn't necessarily have to rescue me for me to have warm feelings towards him, Lana laughed. I liked him very much before that. And Carl? Maxine paused, her turquoise eyes fixing steadily on Lana. I had a feeling you were in love with him. She had to tell someone, someone she trusted, about how confused she was. Maxine, don't answer if you don't want to. But I do, Lana burst out. He told me he loved me when he came at Christmas, and I told him I loved him too, and I do. It's just that... You're not sure of a future with him, Maxine suggested gently. He seems to take it for granted that I'll go back to Germany with him as his wife. He wants to go back to help build it up again. I can't blame him. But Germany is not my country. I can't see myself there. I don't speak the language. I doubt I'd get a job because unemployment is bound to be awful. The people won't be comfortable about him bringing back an English woman, whether we win the war or not. He thinks we'll win, and I have to believe that, but there's no guarantee. Besides, Lana glanced across at the young matron. I don't want to give up my life here. Bingham Hall's done so much for me, helping me get over Dickie, giving me a better outlook on life. You said it would. She gave a self-conscious laugh. You said the children helped you as much as you did them, and I now know exactly what you meant. But there's something even more important than my wishes. Maxine raised her eyebrows. Oh? It's Peter. I've thought long and hard about him. He needs the full attention of his father. But Peter likes you, Maxine said, and trusts you. He tolerates me as I'm a link between him and Carl, but he'd be very resentful if Carl and I ever got married. And Carl's made it clear he doesn't want children, whereas I do. Lana could have bitten her tongue out, mentioning wanting children. More than once, she'd wondered if the twin babies had been adopted yet, please God, together in a loving home, but hadn't voiced it, as she hadn't wanted to bring up the subject of adoption. However, Maxine seemed quite calm as she leaned back in her chair and studied Lana with a narrowed gaze. That's an important issue. He'd probably change his mind once you were his wife. No, Lana shook her head. Carl won't say what I want to hear. I know that now. I'm resigned to it. Where does Frank come into all this? If I hadn't met Carl, I would have fallen head over heels for Frank. Really? Yes. This sounds awful, but yesterday Frank and I had an honest talk. He said he saw my face when I said goodbye to Carl and could tell I was in love with him. Then he said it was very difficult for him because he'd fallen in love with me himself. Good gracious! Maxine's eyes were wide. It must be wonderful to have two such attractive chaps madly in love with you. But it's not, Lana protested. I can't work out what to do. She paused. Let's change the subject. There's something I do want to do, if you agree. It's Priscilla's birthday next month. She'll be 13 on the 21st. Her birthday last year must have been terrible, as it was the first one since her mother and father died. I'd like to make this a special one. I'll be delighted to help, Maxine smiled as she flipped the page of her calendar, and we'll need to let Bertie know so she can save up coupons for the sugar and the dried fruit for the cake. Apart from the three of us, Lana said, can we keep it a surprise? Priscilla hates any fuss. Look how she shrugged off our attempts to make a mention in class of her helping the children to escape on the night of the fire. I wouldn't put it past her to say she doesn't want any special party. But I think she deserves it. She does. Maxine looked at Lana thoughtfully. Just before you go, Lana, I will say one thing, and it's serious. If you really, truly loved Carl, you'd go anywhere in the world with him. As I would with Crofton, if he asked me to. Lana gave a sharp intake of breath.
"Would you really, Maxine?" she said in a soft voice. Planning Priscilla's surprise party helped Lana to push any possible future with Carl into the back of her mind. She knew she would have to confront it, but not now, not yet. The following day, Frank telephoned to ask her if she'd like to go to the pictures the following Saturday. "Just as friends," he said, "no strings." For an instant, she wished he hadn't said that. She wished he'd just asked her to the pictures, and that was that. But she understood he was trying not to put her under any pressure. "I'd like that," she said, and added, "very much." To Lana's relief, Frank appeared perfectly friendly and natural, although he carefully avoided touching her. But once they were in the cinema, Lana couldn't help her eye straying to Frank's hand, resting lightly on his thigh. Not for the first time, she noticed how strong and capable it looked, and she itched to feel her hand in his. Just as a warm and friendly gesture, she told herself. What if she put her hand into his? Would he snatch his away? Or would he curl his fingers around hers? Would he think she'd fallen out of love with Carl? Biting her lip, these thoughts ran through her brain, and she kept both hands tightly together on her lap. When he bent his head towards her, she was startled, as though he knew her topsy-turvy thoughts. "Would you mind?" he whispered. "No, of course not," she whispered back, thinking he was about to take her hand. She was disappointed when he merely took out his pipe. She was aware of him taking out his leather pouch and pushing some tobacco into the bowl and lighting it. The aroma was rich and mellow and somehow comforting. He looked at her, but she couldn't see his expression in the dark. "Did you enjoy the film?" he asked when they were strolling into the foyer. "Yes," she said, hoping he wouldn't question her too closely about this latest Humphrey Bogart film, as she hadn't taken much of it in. "But the news is what really cheered me up. It was so horrible last time when we saw all those bombs landing on Berlin, though I know it was supposed to boost our morale that we were given as good as we got, and more, but it had the opposite effect on me." "The war is definitely turning our way now," Frank said, helping her on with her coat, "and not before time." She was almost certain his fingers deliberately brushed her bare neck. Quickly, as though she hadn't noticed, and to save both of them any embarrassment, she edged away and wrapped her scarf around her neck. He gave her a glance but didn't comment. "Would you like to go somewhere for a drink?" She couldn't stay in his presence so close to him any longer. "Can we give it a miss this time? I'm feeling a little tired." She was relieved when he gave her one of his warm smiles. "Of course." He braked hard outside Bingham Hall, causing the gravel to fly. She raised her eyes. Much as she was tempted to tell him it was bad for the car, she held the words back. There was no point in spoiling the mood. He switched off the engine and went round to open her door. "Thank you so much for a lovely evening," she said, as she swung her long legs out onto the drive. "We're the same height when I'm wearing heels," Lana realised, as they stood facing one another. He kissed her cheek. "When's your day off?" "It varies, but sometimes a Thursday." "I'd have to work in the morning, but how about if I get away around 2? We could go to Sefton Park if the weather's reasonable. We seem to be having a dry spell, but who knows how long that'll last? Not that Barney minds what weather it is, so long as he's out." Frank looked at her. "Sorry, I never asked. Would you mind if we took Barney?" "I shouldn't like it if you left him at home," Lana smiled. Chapter 41.
"Prissy's birthday! It's Prissy's birthday!"
the children chanted when Priscilla came slowly down the stairs on the morning of the 21st of March to clear blue skies. "Your birthday, and it's the first day of spring," Lana told her. She'd been waiting at the bottom of the stairs to be the first one to say happy birthday, but some of the younger children had beaten her to it. "You've done your hair differently. I like it pulled back with the ribbon."
"I wish they wouldn't call me Prissy," Priscilla muttered, ignoring the compliment.
"You know, when people shorten your name, it means they like you." Priscilla's grey eyes narrowed. "It's the same when they tease you," Lana added. People don't bother to tease if they don't like you. And if you get annoyed, it will only make children do it all the more. Just smile and thank them for acknowledging your birthday. Priscilla didn't look convinced. It was such a shame. When she did give a rare smile, she looked so lovely, Lana thought sadly. She hoped the young girl would enjoy her birthday, as Bertie and Reggie and Ethel had worked hard to make this a special one. Well, there was still time.
Now for the cake, Bertie said that afternoon, as she brought out an iced cake from the pantry. She set it on a plate covered with a doily.
Reggie, did you put the balloons out like I told you?
Yes, cook, I did. Reggie's tone was mocking. But Bertie was obviously used to him now, Lana thought with amusement, as the cook didn't come back with her usual snappy reply.
But I'd better go and check everything's in place, he added.
The cake looks superb, Lana commented when Reggie had disappeared. Incredible that you managed to ice it and produce all the candles.
Bertie grinned.
We have our ways, Hen. Jerry isn't going to take over quite yet.
Lana and Maxine had chipped in to buy Priscilla a songbook. Lana had spotted it in a second-hand music shop in Liverpool and seized it. Barbara had painted a portrait of Rupert, and the rest of the staff had put a little bit of cash in an envelope for her.
Bingham Village School had even sent her a card. The young girl's place setting looked exciting with the presents and envelopes. The children rushed into the dining room, all talking at once, not noticing at first the festive air.
Prissy, come and sit next to us,
one of the twins shouted. Priscilla hovered in the doorway, hesitatingly.
No, she's going to sit with me,
Betsy called out and plonked herself down. Priscilla made for her usual place at the far end, but Lana stepped forward.
I believe you're over here, next to me, she said, taking the girl's stiffened arm, feeling her reluctance as she barely allowed herself to be led to her new place at the table.
Lana watched the young girl's face as she scanned the two wrapped gifts and envelopes containing her cards. The children simmered down when Priscilla opened the first card, which was so large it wasn't in an envelope. Every child had signed their name in it. Some had drawn a miniature picture or written a small note. She spent a long time reading the card, and when she turned to Lana, the expression in her large grey eyes seemed to carry a question.
"Are you all right, love?" Lana said.
Priscilla nodded and chewed her bottom lip. She opened the card from the school, read it, and put it to one side. She picked up the last one, which had no envelope, and leaning over, Lana noticed a crayon drawing of a striped orange cat with a message ballooning from its mouth, though the words weren't clear. Priscilla opened the card, a frown creasing her smooth forehead. Then the corners of her mouth twitched mischievously before she handed it to Lana.
May I read it?
Lana mouthed. Priscilla shrugged, though she gave Lana a half smile. Lana couldn't understand a word, but a warm feeling stole round her heart. It was more than she'd hoped for. Peter had taken the trouble to make a special card for Priscilla and write it in his own language so no one else could understand it. Priscilla looked across at Peter and Lana was gratified to see a secret smile pass between the two children. When Priscilla unwrapped the songbook, her eyes shone as she began flicking through it.
Thank you, Miss Ashwin. These are lovely songs.
It was from Matron as well.
Yes, I know. I'll thank her.
And Miss Graham has offered to help you practice. She says she'll accompany you on the piano.
But it was Rupert's portrait that stole the occasion. Barbara had captured him beautifully.
Oh, I love him, Priscilla cried. Mrs. Steen is so clever. I wish I could paint like her.
Then her face dropped.
But I don't know where to put it.
I have the perfect solution, Priscilla. Maxine had left her table and stepped over to Priscilla's seat. From now on, you have your own bedroom on the nursery floor.
Oh, thank you, Matron. It would be like when I...
Her eyes welled up with tears.
You're almost grown up, Maxine said. You should have some privacy.
Thank you, Matron, and for the songbook.
Maxine patted her on the shoulder. Enjoy the rest of your birthday, Priscilla.
"Excuse me all, I need to put this cake down."
It was Bertie holding a large tray with Priscilla's cake. She set it on the table.
"You know what you have to do, hen?"
Priscilla looked up at the cook.
"You have to make a wish."
"I'll never get what I always wish for,"
Priscilla mumbled under her breath. "I'm going to light the candles anyway," Bertie said firmly, striking a match.
"Don't cry, Prissy."
It was little Betsy. For some reason, she'd taken a shine to Priscilla, and Lana noticed Priscilla always treated her kindly. Betsy put her thin brown arm on the young girl's.
"Make a wish anyway, but you're not allowed to tell anyone, else it don't come true."
"Or else it won't come true," Lana corrected. Bertie finished lighting the candles, then stood back.
"Make a wish! Make a wish, Prissy!"
the children bellowed. Priscilla leaned over and blew out the candles in two goes, and only Lana noticed the tears in the young girl's eyes as the children shouted, "Hooray!" Lana rose to her feet and clapped for the children to quieten down. All eyes turned to her.
"This is a special day we're celebrating, and not just because it's Priscilla's birthday. We've never thanked her properly for helping all the girls in their dormitory down the fire escape on the night of the fire. There may have been more burns and injuries if she hadn't acted quickly and sensibly. So please give her a big clap."
Piping voices from the girls calling out thank you, and some cheers from the boys, and everyone's enthusiastic clapping added to the cacophony. But Priscilla's eyes were downcast. "She doesn't like this kind of attention," Lana thought. She was used to being the only child at home with her family, maybe only allowed to talk when she was spoken to. Lana almost wished she hadn't gone to such lengths. Then Priscilla suddenly looked up, her eyes flicking round the table. She rose to her feet, her chair scraping loudly on the floor. The dining room hushed, the children all turning in Priscilla's direction.
"Thank you for the lovely card from all of you. It was very kind," she said in her clear voice, then looked across the table at her friend. "Und danke schön, Peter, für deine Geburtstagskarte," she said softly.
Then she sat down, tears streaming down her cheeks. To Lana's disappointment, Frank phoned at 1:45 on Thursday, the day they'd arranged to go to Sefton Park, to say he'd had an emergency call from one of the farms. A young ram had been attacked by a rogue dog, which had gouged a wound in its side. "I'm hoping to save him," he said apologetically on the telephone, "though he's in quite a bad way."
"Don't say another word," Lana said. "I don't know anything about rams, but if there's anything I can do to help, please ask."
"Maybe come over and make me a cup of tea," Frank said, already sounding exhausted. "And keep Barney company. Vera's gone to have lunch with her daughter, and I told her not to rush back. Of course, I didn't know about the ram at the time."
"I'll be over right away," Lana said, pleased she might be useful, if only to provide hot drinks. He probably hadn't had anything to eat either, she thought. At least she could make him a sandwich.
Harold had taken the car to get the bumper straightened out from when it had plunged into the ditch, so Lana half ran to the surgery. She knocked and tried the door. It was open.
"Frank, it's me," she called.
"Go down the hall," his voice called back. "It's the second door on the right after the waiting room."
A strong smell of disinfectant hit her as she eased the door open and let herself in. Frank looked up, keeping his hand on the poor animal who was stretched out on the long narrow table with a rag wrapped around its nose. Its eyes were closed, but it was twitching. The towel it was lying on was covered in blood, and for a moment Lana felt queasy. Then she mentally reprimanded herself and approached the table where a lamp was trained on the ram's injured side. The sight of the deep gash almost had her rushing to the lavatory, but she gripped the edge of the table and pulled her stomach in hard.
"What can I do?"
Her voice shook, but thankfully he seemed too busy to notice.
"Wash your hands over in the sink."
He jerked his head towards one of the corners. "Then hold him down while I clean the wound. He won't struggle. I've doped him." An hour flew by as Lana handed him instruments he gestured towards, not always picking up the right ones, but his voice was steady as he corrected her,
and towards the end she frequently worked out what he needed before he asked for it. Full of admiration, she watched him absorbed in his work, nodding and muttering, until finally he completed the last stitch and cut the thread. He stretched up and rolled back his shoulders. "I'd forgotten how difficult it was to perform an op on one's own," he said. "But you were marvellous. You'd make a great assistant." "I didn't have a clue what I was doing most of the time," Lana said truthfully. "But I'm glad if you thought I was some sort of help." She looked at the animal, who was now breathing regularly. "Will he survive?" Frank glanced down. "I think he will. He's young, but he's a tough beast. But it's going to take a while for him to recover. Luckily, Grayson's one of the better farmers, and he'll give him the time he needs. I'll keep him here overnight and take him back tomorrow. Then I'll be sure he's no longer in danger." "Please let me know," Lana said anxiously. "You will, won't you?" Their eyes met. She caught her breath. "Yes, I'll let you know," he said. 2 days later, Frank rang Bingham Hall. "How's my new assistant?" he asked, and Lana could picture his eyes twinkling. "I'm well, thank you, but more important, how's the patient?" "Young Lightning. He's a bit wobbly on his pins, but he'll be fine." "I'm so glad. You were wonderful, Frank. It was a privilege seeing you in action." She heard him chuckle. "We never got to Sefton Park. Any chance over Easter?" "Can we leave it for the following Sunday? I promised my parents I'd go and see them over the holiday." "Look forward to it." The receiver clicked. She had to smile. He didn't really waste words. The thought suddenly occurred to her as to what her parents would think of Frank. But she didn't have to wonder. She knew they'd both approve unreservedly. Even Dickie? Would he approve? A small voice questioned. Yes, even Dickie. That certainty made her feel perfectly content. Lana received a postcard from Carl wishing her a happy Easter and hoping she was well. She couldn't grumble about the brevity of his message because she hadn't sent him anything. Every time she began a letter, she became so worried that she might say the wrong thing that she'd put her pen and notepaper away, telling herself she would write it later. In the end, she sent him a brief letter to tell him she and the other teachers were planning an Easter egg hunt. The children were getting excited, as they'd never heard of such a thing before. She asked if they had the same tradition in Germany. She sealed the envelope and decided to walk to the village to post it. He might just get it in time for Easter. Strolling in Sefton Park with Frank, Lana almost forgot that the country was still at war, the Allies embroiled in heavy battles at Monte Cassino as they tried to advance on Rome. Here, in the park, it was so peaceful. There were a few couples enjoying the air, and an old man on a bench was tucking into a sandwich, but there were no children, only a nanny briskly pushing a pram. Frank hadn't brought Barney after all, but he took on a mysterious air when she asked where he was. "Vera, the nurse, takes him home sometimes, if I'm going somewhere they don't welcome dogs."
"But it says you can bring dogs into the park," she said,
but he didn't comment. They were walking in step, but apart. Taking a chance he might rebuff her, she slipped her hand through his arm, and he looked down at her and smiled. "You can't believe there's a war on, can you, when you hear the birds and see the flowers," he said. "Pity about the daffs, they're more or less over. But we've still got narcissi." He pointed to several clumps around some of the tree trunks.
"The sun's a bit weak, but it still feels as though spring is really here," Lana said, happily falling in with his mood.
"My favourite time of the year," Frank said. "I love summer, but it gallops away, whereas spring gives you all the colours of green, and you know you have it all to come."
"It's wonderful, and the primroses. I wish they didn't grow so low down so we could smell them."
"Go ahead," Frank laughed. "They do have a perfume, but I can tell you're not a country girl if you're worried about getting your knees dirty."
"It's my stockings I'd worry about," Lana said seriously.
Then she gave a mischievous grin.
"Maybe I'm not a country girl, but I'll show you."
She crouched, feeling her skirt ride up her legs, but it was too late. She'd taken up the challenge. She put her hands on the ground and, face down, inhaled their scent. After some seconds, Frank held out his hand to pull her to her feet. And? Lana smiled. It's not like any flower I know. I can't really describe it, but it's sort of innocent, like spring itself. Frank looked at her intently, then chuckled.
What are you laughing at?
You. He pulled out a pale blue handkerchief and gently wiped the tip of her nose. Primroses act like little cups, he said, his brown eyes merry. They hold the raindrops. She put her hand to her nose and laughed.
Well, I'm obviously not a country girl, but neither am I a sophisticated city girl.
You're perfect, just as you are. The air stilled between them. They wandered over to a vegetable plot where a gardener was bent almost double planting potatoes in one of the raised areas. He looked up when he heard them. Morning. He lifted his cap and they watched as he dug another hole the depth of his trowel and popped in the sprouting potato. King Edwards, he said with a satisfying grin. You can't beat them. Frank tucked Lana's hand in his arm as they walked the circular tour, admiring the waterfalls and pools. But she had to reluctantly remove her hand when they faced the stepping stones over a stream, and he gently guided her in front. Take it slowly, Frank warned. There's algae on some of them. She'd almost got to the last stone when her foot skidded, and she would have toppled over if Frank hadn't grabbed her waist from behind. Steady, Lana. She was aware of his hands. She couldn't look round, or she would have fallen again. This time he took her hand as they walked back to the car. When she glanced at him, he gave her hand a gentle squeeze. For your own safety. She grinned at him. Thank you, kind sir. He grinned back. Ready for some lunch? Definitely, Lana said. Do you know somewhere nearby? I still don't know my way around Liverpool. Nor do most Liverpudlians, Frank said with a grim expression. Since the Blitz, it's hard to recognise anywhere.
Do you think the war will be over soon, Frank?
Hard to tell, but it's turning our way now. She couldn't help her thoughts straying to Carl. Firmly, she pushed him to the back of her mind. How were your parents when you went to see them? He said. My mother went through a serious illness, but she's much better now, and happy that things have worked out for me at the orphanage. They both know how I love teaching. Well, most of the time, she laughed. It gets a bit tricky sometimes. I'm sure it does, Frank said. She enjoyed walking with him, matching her rhythm to his. We'll see if we can get into the Adelphi, Frank said, as they rounded the corner into Ranelagh Street.
I never expected this, Lana said. I'm not sure I'm dressed for it.
I've been admiring that skirt showing your gorgeous long legs ever since you bent down to smell the primroses, he chuckled. So I'm sure the Adelphi will allow you in with no trouble at all. But they certainly wouldn't Barney. They were shown to a table in the dining room where huge cone-shaped chandeliers hung from an ornate ceiling and crisp white tablecloths covered tables for four.
What a beautiful room, Lana said, removing her hat. A waiter appeared to take their jackets.
By the way, this is my treat for being my assistant with Lightning, Frank said.
I didn't want anything.
I know. That's why I'm treating. A waiter came over to hand them the menu. Order whatever you fancy, Frank went on, but I'm having game pie, which I can strongly recommend.
She wondered how often he came here and who with.
That sounds lovely. And we're having a glass of wine to celebrate.
What are we celebrating?
Today? This reprieve from work?
Us.
You never talk about yourself, Lana said. I don't even know if you're married. You can find out by talking to anyone in Bingham, Frank said, rolling his eyes. Most of them love a gossip.
I prefer to hear it from you.
They were interrupted by the waiter who took their order. There's not that much to tell, Frank said when the waiter had disappeared. I'm 43. I was only 14 when the last war started, but my father used to prepare the horses to go to the front. When I was a bit older, the war was still going at the time, and found out what had happened to them. I made up my mind to save animals, not send them to such terrible deaths. So immediately after the war, when I was 18, I began my training. I think it's a wonderful vocation, Lana said, lightly resting her hand on his.
You have to be dedicated.
Frank glanced down at their hands.
2 years more than a doctor, probably, because one minute you're looking at a sick cow and the next you're trying to work out why a goldfish has lost its zest. He grinned at her. But I wouldn't want to do anything else in the world.
You're a natural. I could see that when you were operating on Lightning. Anyway, go on. You married at one point?
I married far too young, before I qualified. His face took on a bitter look. She thought it would be glamorous to be married to a vet, but it's the complete opposite. The worst for her was that I was on call all the time. We rarely went out. And apart from inevitable emergencies, there's overnight lambing where I'd be gone hours. Still do it, of course. But it has its rewards, he went on, his mouth now relaxing into a smile. Knowing you've saved an animal that would have surely died.
Lana was silent, listening to his every word. The waiter came and poured them a glass of wine, then left. When Frank didn't continue, she ventured, "And your wife?" She hated thinking he had a wife who couldn't see what a wonderful husband she had in Frank.
"Ex," he said quickly, as though to reassure her he was well and truly single. 3 years into the marriage, she left me. But before she did, she gave me hell. He shrugged. My divorce came through last year.
I'm so sorry.
Don't be. I was relieved.
Have you children?
No. Rona wasn't keen. She was too conscious of her figure. But I'd love to have them.
He looked at her intently.
Even now?
He paused. What about you?
Lana blinked.
I was engaged to a lovely man who was in the Merchant Navy. His ship was torpedoed in 1941. That was it.
Her eyes filled with tears. We both wanted children. She swallowed hard. Oh, Lana, how awful. It must have been a ghastly time for you.
His eye went to Dickie's ring.
I mean it. But now you have hair best.
She wished he hadn't mentioned Carl. It was like a cloud hanging over them.
Frank, I don't... Sorry, I shouldn't have brought him up. I just can't see you trotting off to Germany after the war, that's all.
I have no plans to do that, she said firmly. He gave her a level gaze.
I'm glad. He picked up his glass. Let's toast this wonderful day. I feel happier than I've felt in ages. How about you?
I'm happy too, Lana said, surprising herself that it was true. She clinked her glass with his. To this wonderful day.
And more wonderful days to come, I hope, Frank said, smiling at her.
Chapter 42. There was something in the air, everyone said. Vague rumours about a big push on the continent. One evening, on the 6th of June, Lana and Maxine, together with Athena and Dolores, were in the common room, listening to the wireless. Maxine was knitting a pullover for Peter. I started it a year ago, she said shamefacedly. I'm hoping to get it finished by winter, but I'm still on the first sleeve.
It could freeze to death if it takes you that long, Lana chuckled.
Suddenly the music stopped.